You're listening to the Chancellor Pink Podcast on Chancellor Pink Radio. Last night I saw a great movie, and it made me angry to later read some of the reviews on IMDb, and I want to talk about it because I was fired up. The movie's First Reformed with Ethan Hawke and Amanda Sigmund Freudfield. I just got to refresh my recollection on what the hell her last name is. Seyfried. S-E-Y-F-R-I-E-D. Amanda Seyfried. And Cedric the Entertainer is also in it, the black dude comedian, which is an interesting casting choice, and he does a good job with his role. But in it, Ethan Hawke is a reverend, so therefore not a priest, so therefore, you know, someone who could procreate, and in fact did in his prior life, was married, a member of the military, had a son. And his tragic backstory is his son went off to Iraq, I guess, and died in that war. And he was all for it. And he felt guilty and lost a lot of his hope and fell into alcoholism because of what happened to his son, because of losing his son for a war that was meaningless, for a war that was wrong in the end. And he lost his marriage as a result of that, too, because he became a depressive alcoholic. But he was rescued from his depression and his prior lost life by being by given this position as a pastor at a church called First Reformed, and it's a historical church that's really nothing more than a museum, and he gives tours, and there's only about 5 or 6 or 10 people that go to services there anymore. So it's like a desolate little outpost, and he's really a museum guide. And so it's sort of a not really a spiritual position. So it's very interesting setup, very intriguing. And it's a historical church, and they're getting ready to celebrate their 250th anniversary. And the reason is that it's famous is it's been through a lot over the years, and there's only been about 10 or 15 pastors over the years, and they did things there, like it was a stop place for slaves on their way on the underground tunnel to escape up to Canada, and they would the one pastor there would hide them under a church pew and help them on their way, yeah, to escape America, to freedom. And I won't say anything more about the plot, but the plot is, it really what happens is he gets involved with an environmentalist and his wife, and the wife's pregnant, and the husband is very depressed because he sees what's happening to the world through climate change. And he talks about how back in 2010, one particular scientist or group of scientists predicted that if changes weren't instituted by 2015, significant changes, the process of global warming and such would be irreversible. And the guy tells the priest or the pastor, it's 2017 now, and we're not doing anything. And he also talks about how activists are killed when they try to stand up against big money, when they try to stop the progression of like the destruction of the rainforest and such, and they've been assassinated basically and killed. So, and the pastor's trying to counsel him and help him and his wife, and then it goes on from there. It's not really a plot-driven film. But there are a couple significant events and twists there that I don't want to talk about because I don't want to ruin it. But that's the setup. And it is, I guess people use the word slow moving nowadays to describe where there is dialogue. I don't think it's slow moving at all, but I think it's riveting, but it's dialogue driven and it's character driven. And it's about what's going on inside the characters. So if you don't like movies that are about what people are thinking and feeling, you won't like the movie. It's a movie about the visceral nature of faith, money, loss, redemption, revenge, grief. All of these emotions and thoughts when dealing with people. And how do we interact in the world in a healthy way when we feel that the world is letting us down? And the one character of the husband, the environmentalist, he asks the pastor a question which becomes a sort of a theme in the movie. Will God forgive us? And the pastor just says, who can understand the mind of God? But the question is completed by the addition by the husband of, will God forgive us for what we're doing to his planet, to this gift? So what it does is it puts, in my opinion, a wonderful spin, and a spin I agree with personally, on the climate change issue, which is, normally it's cast in the view of the crazy liberals on the left and the scientists that they're hypothesizing this stuff because they're trying to destroy our faith, because they're trying to say, you know, God doesn't love this planet, or that this kind of crazy shit would happen. It's never happened. You know, he's got it all in perfect balance. There's a big master plan. And so they're just trying to tear it down because they're all atheists, because none of them have faith, because none of them believe in God. You know, that's kind of the spin that the right puts on climate change. And of course, the spin the left puts on it is they're all in denial about it because they got to believe in their God and they think God's going to take care of it. So they refuse to look at science, or they say they're all stupid and they don't believe in science, or they can't even look towards science. But they always throw in religion. The left, when they're bashing the climate change deniers, they're always saying it's about religion. What this movie does is, to me, puts it where it really is, where the problem, and it's a problem, the problem of in America, the problem that we have, one of the biggest problems that exists, is climate change science. And the fact that we aren't all just embracing it. Why is that? Why are we denying science and tests and evidence and that is pretty incontrovertible? Why are we so hell-bent on classifying it as a political issue as opposed to just a fact that we need to address, a human problem of humanity and of this planet that needs to be addressed for the sake of. Now, here's why. There are a couple reasons I'll just quickly address here, but I want to get back to the point of why the movie casts it perfectly. You know, environmentalists have always been leftist, and the Republicans and the right wing have always classified any environmental issue as political, because it stops the progress of business and money, see? And so anytime an environmentalist wants to preserve land or, you know, or animals or anything, well, what they're trying to do is stop the encroachment of construction and development, which is money. So there's a clash there. And the lefties don't care so much about money. They care more about, you know, what is natural and alive. And so they stand up for ideals. They have ideologies and they stand up for those more. And I suppose you could say the right wing has ideologies too, but they're about greed, you know, greed and money and capitalism and every man for himself kind of mentality. And as long as you're on top of the mountain, you just look down at the bleeding heart liberals and you say, you just wish you could be here, pal. You know, you had the money I have, you'd be taking over this forest too. You'd be killing these animals too. You'd be doing this. Do you eat meat, pal? You kill animals then, pal. You know, do you live in a home that was built of things that were chopped down and constructed by businesses, pal? You know, you live off of the work my companies do. So don't play so high and mighty, right? I mean, there's a lot of logic to that, right? But the lefty says, look, it's not because I don't have what you have. I didn't live my life pursuing money. I didn't live my life to take and have more because it wasn't my value. So no, you're not above me and I don't want what you have. And if you gave me what you have, I would handle it all differently still, even if I was wealthy. I still would put my ideologies first, and I still have morals, and I have principles that are superior to yours, pal, and I'm above you, pal, because I actually care about other people that aren't me, pal. I'm not just looking to, you know, dump more green shit into my wallet. I'm actually looking to make as many other people happy as possible. While I'm happy, but I mean, if I'm being taken care of, why do I need to hurt other people to make myself happier? And so I'm going to listen, and if there are problems with what I'm doing that are adversely affecting nature or other creatures, I'm going to stop. I'm going to stop doing those things. I'm going to balance it. I'm actually going to listen to science and facts and balance it, right? So this is the clash. We got these two opinions, these two ideologies kind of, and they are really left and right in a way. But the problem is we've cast climate change today into this religious bent. The left are atheists, that's why they believe it. The right think God will take care of it, that's why they don't. Boom, that's it. And what's brilliant about this movie is it makes the lead character who is pulled into the realization of the science about climate change, he's religious, right? He is someone of faith, but he is also, of course, because this was written by the great Paul Schrader. And I don't use that word very often in film. And he's made some shit movies, Paul Schrader. He's written some shit ones and he's directed some shit ones. But especially lately, he's made some really crappy films. But when he gets it right, man, he hits it out of the park, you know, as he did with his screenplay for Taxi Driver. I mean, he truly hit it out of the park. But what he does brilliantly here is he makes the lead character as he's dealing with this science issue. You can't call him an atheist. You can't clarify it as, you know, God or not God. You make the lead character a man of God. Brilliant move. Because it can happen. Because it's really where it belongs. Because this isn't a faith issue. And that's the point that it is an issue of faith in man. It's an issue of faith in mankind. It's not an issue of faith in God. It's how much should we, what's wrong with mankind? That's what the issue of climate change is, because look what we're doing. And so he casts the question, will God forgive us for what we're doing to this earth? A brilliant twist that you can stick right up the butts of the right wingers. Who say that you're just a leftist, liberal, atheist. No. You, Mr. Holy Man, Mr. Holy Roller. Look at the science. Look at what we, mankind, is doing to this planet. Will God forgive us for the way we're destroying and shitting all over his gift? Now what do you have to say to that, Mr. Holy Roller? And Holy Roller just goes, yeah. Who do you care? How dare you question what God knows and doesn't know? But see, if you're a pastor asking that question, how dare I ask, will God forgive us? I'm a fucking pastor, man. That's my job. So it's a really good way to pose this debate. And what I love about it is it clarifies, in my opinion, the truth, which is it is not a political debate. It is a debate about humanity. It's a moral debate. It's a debate about sin. Whether you believe in the concept or not, I believe in it. But let's just call it deep, deep-seated wrong, if you don't like the word sin. A debate between, the sin of mankind versus doing the right thing. It's a debate about preserving for future generations. And so Paul Schrader, you know, a man who wrote not only Taxi Driver, but wrote and directed the film Affliction with Nick Nolte and James Coburn, who won an Oscar for that movie, and wrote the screenplay for Raging Bull, which was, of course, maybe the best film of the 1980s. Wrote the screenplay for Scorsese's Bringing Out the Dead, too, with Nicolas Cage, which is a movie, if you haven't seen it, I didn't like it when it initially came out. I was disappointed in it, but it's worth revisiting. Still not a great film, but it has a lot to it that's pretty damn good. But anyway, Paul Schrader is no dummy. So you know when you're watching this film, you're in the hands of a guy, and he borrows some Scorsese tactics in this movie. And absolutely, without question, I've got to say up front, this is very much like a Taxi Driver kind of feel and film. So if you didn't like Taxi Driver, and I don't mean by the violent ending, that's what it's famous for, that movie, is the really violent ending. Back in the day, it was like a shocking ending. That's not what I'm talking about. It doesn't. What it's like Taxi Driver in is it's the one man, kind of a loner, but he's a decent person, but he has some oddities to him or problems, some baggage, struggling with the world that he's in and the ugliness of it and the conflicts that come into his heart. And so it's kind of got that lone gunman kind of feel that, you know, like there's a song Peter Gabriel wrote called, what was it called? Anyway, it's about a gunman growing up as a child and he becomes an assassin or whatever. But, you know, so it's kind of got that feel of like, you know, what takes place in a man's heart and soul when he's faced with moral ambiguities and the corruption of people and so forth. And he mixes it with faith, which is a topic that I don't think we make enough movies about, to be honest with you. Because, again, I don't think religion and faith is something that should be thrown away forever and forgotten just because we develop more science. I think it's something that needs to constantly be discussed and worked through. And even with the disastrous new revelations of more horrific acts by priests in the Catholic Church, I don't think that means you throw away the Catholic Church. Now, if you happen to be someone who was raised in the Catholic Church and had a certain belief that they were special, priests were above us, that they had some calling and it made them like a glowing halo above their head, then this would be something that would make it very hard for you to recalibrate your thinking of priests and the church, you know, once it's been so high and mighty to have it destroyed so deeply and you realize, boy, not only are they just regular people, but they're some of the worst regular people, you know. That would be hard. I understand that. And, you know, if you got to leave the church or drop your faith in the church forever because of these continuing revelations, so be it. But as for me, I never really looked at priests as super special. And that's partially why I thought of being one for a number of years, from when I was about 12 or 13 to when I was about 16, I was pretty sure that's what I was going to do for my life, was be a priest. And yet I was, you know, I had lustful thoughts and was masturbating since I was 7. So I knew that sexuality and my interest in dirty thoughts, you know, was always there. So that was always going to be a conflict, you know. But it didn't stop me from thinking I could hack it and wanting to be a priest. So I never viewed being a priest or living a life, a spiritual life, as something that made me a blessed, magical creature. So, and I didn't look at priests that way. I look at the church more as just people that live for the most important thing. That's why I wanted to do it. To me, whether or not there's life after death, whether or not Jesus was real and what he shared was real, and what that means if it is real. This is what people don't understand. They all go to the Buddha. All the more left-leaning people today, if they're spiritual at all, it's with, you know, Taoism, Buddhism. And I just think they're missing the boat, because an analysis of whether or not you believe in Jesus is the answer, because Jesus has so much more to offer anybody looking for any answers of what could be from spiritual life than anybody. I mean, the reason he spread worldwide so much, his message, is because there is no religion that can top Christianity when it comes to, you know, the payoff. It's like playing in the, whichever, you know, major of the four majors in golf has the biggest purse. That's like Christianity in the religions. It's got the biggest purse. The payoff, it's like the Price is Right. No, it's not one of the rinky-dink things where they call them up from the audience. It's the ending. It's the, what they call it, the showcase. It's the big showcase, and it's the biggest showcase. It's the one you want to bid the most on because Jesus didn't just say, you know, how to love one another and forgive one another and, you know, all kinds of good advice about the wealthy and the right way to live. I mean, he talked about how to get into the kingdom of heaven, and he said it's real. And he showed us, if you believe in him, he showed us it resurrected from a dead body to a spiritual form. And he told us we are also going to be in spiritual form and leave our bodies behind. And he told us the way to make our lives eternal in the kingdom of heaven. Now, I don't know what more you want if you're worried about dying, okay? Which is really, when you get down to it, religion is two things. How do I live in life while I'm alive? And what's death mean? And how does it reflect back on this life? Does it have any meaning? So how do I live when I'm alive? And when I come to the ending, did anything matter? And what's it mean? And they go hand in hand. Yes, it means something. Yes, there's eternity. And yes, you will be rewarded if you live your life alive a certain way. And here are the rules for that. And basically, no other religion gives a complete picture on that whole concern like Christianity. And not only that, proof positive. People say, we don't know. Well, if you believe the Gospels, we know. Jesus returned. He walked through doors. He walked. He performed all kinds of miracles. But after he died, they saw him. Thomas put his fingers through the holes in his hand and his side. You know, he came to them, though they were in an indoor place with locked everything. He appeared to them. So he was a floating spirit, but he was also very visible, and it was Jesus. And Paul saw him along the road to Damascus, and he became an apostle, you know, after the fact, changed his whole life and wrote large portions of the New Testament that is a part of the Bible to this day. So this is about the message of Jesus, is very much about proof, if you believe what you're reading. If you think it's all made up bullshit, then of course not, and it's nothing. But if you do your historical studies and you look at the basis and the where the written word came from, and then you look at the consistency of the messaging, and you look at the sacrifice of the lives of the people to spread the word of what, a made up message? You know, you think about the intensity and the willingness to die for the ability to spread the message, and then all of it kind of works together to justify the truth behind the message. But anyway, that's my own personal opinion. At the end of the day, all I'm saying is Christianity is the slam dunk, home run, grand slam of all religions, because it talks and shows, and if you believe it, proves eternal life and salvation. And also the message of how to live is just pure star resistance. It is, you know, the premium way to live, sir, because it teaches love and forgiveness and understanding in a way that is so underutilized even to this day. People just don't seem to embrace one another in the way that is Christian is the term, because it's about loving and forgiving and compassion and understanding. And so, yes, the environment fits in there. Caring about your fellow man, caring about the earth. It fits into Christianity perfectly. And so what the brilliance of First Reformed is, it takes a lefty atheist scientist issue and says, no. This is a loving humanity issue. This is an issue of spirituality. This is an issue of Christianity. And the Christians, the church-going Christians are living for money. A lot of them. In this movie. But also in some of them in real life. Not, you know, there are a lot of poor Christians out there. So, and Jesus certainly embraced the poor. But what this movie discusses is the conflict is really not one between atheism and Christianity at all. It's a conflict between money and humanity. It's a conflict between the soul of man and the greed of man. And that's why we're destroying our own earth and going to make the future lives of our own children worthless and terrifying and catastrophic. Because of our greed. Because of our greed. And that's the way the movie casts these issues. And it's perfect because it's the truth. And I don't give a flying fuck if you or anyone else doesn't see it. You're wrong. You're wrong. Climate change is real. And if you're not seeing it, it's because you must be one greedy, cold motherfucker. And so when I talk about my anger, I went to IMDb after watching this film, which I think is a brilliant portrayal of the truth of this issue. And no, it's not political. It's about human truth and love and pain and suffering and the conflicts, all the things I said earlier in the podcast. All those issues are very much the point of this film. And if you watch this film and all you come away with is it's a political message, it's a leftist, left-wing, political, preachy, lefty, but then you voted for Trump, number one, which tells you pretty much 90% of what you need to know about someone. If you voted for him and you still support him, then you're in a particular class of person that I don't think that I'm going to keep open my heart to and try to live with you because you're Americans. But holy cow, you've got some problems. You've got some issues that are deep-seated and frightening. A lot more frightening than anything this pastor in this movie displays. And so I read the reviews of people who are like that, who are Trump voters, obviously, who just bash the movie 1 out of 10. I give it 10 out of 10, by the way. 1 out of 10, and oh my God, what a disappointment, what a lousy film. And people saying it's blasphemous that anybody that knows anything about Christianity would never say the things this pastor says or does, and it's totally anti-religion. Obviously, it hates God, it hates religion. And anyone that knows anything about Paul Schrader, he's like William Friedkin, he's like William Peter Blatty, who wrote The Exorcist. These are some intellectual, smart as fuck guys who are also highly spiritual. Just like Martin Scorsese. He's like that too. He was also going to be a priest. Did you know that? Martin Scorsese, for a lot of years in his life, thought he was going to be a priest. So these are people who care, who are smart, who are liberal, but who are also spiritual. And the idea that you somehow can't be spiritual or can't believe in God if you're liberal, you know, that is so small-minded and hateful. And it's what a lot of the Trump voters think too. If you don't want to preserve these things, if you don't believe in this whole little small little world we're in, then you're one of them and that means you hate God. Well, that's not it at all. And this movie makes that clear. And so the people that say that casting this issue in the mind of a spiritual man and in having Ethan Hawke represent God is blasphemous, and making a movie about this issue and casting it the way Schrader did makes the whole movie shit. And that, you know, watching the struggles of an actual ideological position is garbage. You know, how many times you see that? The right-wingers, when they see a movie that literally looks at an issue and kind of argues it from the left perspective without question, but does so wonderfully, brilliantly, with great acting, anytime that happens, They say, this movie's shit. This movie's garbage. And you know what that isn't? And this is what made me angry. That's not film criticism. That's not critique of a movie. That's you being an ugly, hateful motherfucker, and you're taking your political view and you're shitting on a great masterpiece, a wonderful work of art, a fantastic film, because you are so bent right, such a hell-bent Trump voter with so much greed shoved up your money-grubbing ass that you can't even stop and realize this is a great movie, very well done, but you don't agree with it. That's all. You're too blind to see the truth. That's okay. Hey, admit it, but don't take the movie down, you fucking loser. Don't get on IMDb and mouth off with diarrhea flowing out of your vocal cords because you don't like the position of a very well done, excellent, artistic, great movie. Just because you don't agree with it doesn't make it a bad movie, you fucking moron. That's where I come from, see. I come from a place where if you were an actual film reviewer, this is the problem with opening up the internet to all the fucking morons of the world. Movie reviewers, okay, they actually have a job to do, and they have their own biases, but they work hard to silence them because the idea is to review the film objectively as a work of art, as a creation, because that's what it is. You review the directing, the writing, you know, the editing, the lighting. You can take a, you know, maybe some films are too dark nowadays. I have that as a big problem. CGI, special effects, is it cheesy? Does it look real? The acting, hugely important. You know, you look at these various elements. I'm a movie lover. Anyone who listens to my podcast knows this. So to me, when you take time out to review a film, whether you're Joe Blow in his armchair back at home or you're, you know, in the day, Siskel and Ebert, you need to realize you're doing something here that involves a certain level of skill. And if you don't have it, then fucking shut up. Nobody cares what you think. And if you do have it, when you strongly disagree with maybe a message of a movie or an overriding theme, you know, that should not be the central focus of your review. Your review should be about the movie because that's what you're doing. You're reviewing a creation. And just because you don't agree with the thoughts that are going on inside some of the characters' heads doesn't mean, A, that isn't realistic, that those thoughts aren't going on in people's heads, B, that that makes the character some sort of awful, unsympathetic person, or B, that because maybe the movie is so effective in reaching its conclusion and that it pisses you off, that doesn't mean that it was badly done, just the opposite. Maybe you ought to stop and think, you know, hell, I'm angry at this movie because it was good, because it's challenging me. It's challenging the way I view this issue. It's challenging the way I'm thinking of religion involved, it's religion's involvement in this issue and where God would stand on this issue and what it does mean. You know, this movie is actually pissing me off because people, you know, I like to, like everyone else, I like to be comfortable with my truths that I know already. And when something comes along that really makes me doubt my known truths, it pisses me off at first. But I'm not going to be a fool that just mouths off diarrhea on IMDb angry about what pissed me off because I don't agree with it. I'm going to stop and think about it and give myself a couple days to really work through this movie. Maybe, hell, shit, who knows? Maybe I'll change my opinion a little bit. Maybe this will act, you know, really have an effect on me and make me rethink some things, maybe. Because maybe that's why I'm angry, right? Because it's working on me. It's kind of like when you first take apple cider vinegar on an upset stomach. It first goes in there and it burns. And then you know what? It goes away and it helps. But at first it burns, you know. Or when you first put like alcohol on an open wound, right? You put it on there, it's going to burn like hell. But you know what it's doing? It's killing the infection so that in 2 days you're not going to be scratching that motherfucker all pink and swollen because it won't be infected because the alcohol. So initially, yeah, it's like, you know, it hurts. But then let it sink in for a couple days and it's doing good. Maybe some of those Trump voters who did their stupid ass one star reviews of First Reformed could have let the alcohol sink in a little bit, huh? I think so. But so I got angry because you don't have to love this film. I mean, there's some people on there who gave it 5, gave it 6. I believe IMDb right now for the people, it's averaging at 7.3, which is a pretty damn good rating for a movie. So I think it deserves to be higher, but I think it deserves to be like an 8.1 on there. But because of the political fuckheads, it never will be, see. This is a movie, the critics, by the way, 85, and that's with like 48 critics combined Metacritic rating, 85 for First Reformed. That's very high. And usually when you get a kind of a big differential like that between people and critics, it's kind of an arty film that's hard to like, that if you like arty films and if you're into movies a lot, you'll love it like the critics. But if you just kind of want to enjoy a movie and you put it on, you won't like, you know, it'll be like the critics are just getting a little full of themselves here. Usually when there's a big difference like that, it's that. But here, the only reason it's 7-3 versus 8-5 is because of Trump voters and political fucking morons and people that want to be full of hate because of the they don't agree with the underlying, you know, thoughts of the movie. That's why there's a 12-point gap there. Having said that, I'll take it at 73. There are flaws in the movie. I give it a 10, but I could see people who are lefty climate change people, movie lovers, you name it, thinking the movie's a 5 or 6. I don't think it could ever be any lower than that to anybody who knows anything about films or likes movies at all. But I could see it being, you know, in the 6 category to people who are just, there are aspects I could see them disliking about it. Not to me. And in particular, the number one aspect I love that makes it a 10, there are two things. One is, as I said, the brilliance of the idea and the casting and the non-fear of addressing ideological subject matter and also religious subject matter and putting it together like this in this way. I give it a 10 on that alone, just to thank Paul Schrader for making a movie like this. And if you look at the beginning of the movie, it's so fascinating. There's about 6 or 7 or 8, not kidding, like 8, 7 different film companies that had to combine together to produce this film. And it opens up real quiet, but it shows like one after the other, all their little insignias, you know, their little movie opening little things, you know, advertisements, whatever they call those. It does one after the other after the other. And then it opens up with the credits and it says them all again, you know, new line in conjunction with Film First, along with Third Reel Cinema, with the help of, you know, it's just because nobody wants to make this movie. You're never going to get a corporation to make this movie. And again, it's so off the beaten path in terms of today to even make a movie about ideas, to make a movie about struggles, human thoughts, and the characters. It's about dialogue and what's going on inside the characters. Like I said at the beginning, people don't want to make those movies anymore. It's all about what the characters are doing outside their bodies. And nobody cares about what they're thinking, let alone what they're saying. Or rather, nobody cares about what they're saying that much, let alone what they're thinking, let alone what they're feeling or debating or struggling through. We don't care about that. We just care about to have them say some funny words, have them say some cool words, and have them do a lot of stuff, you know, have them doing all kinds of things and then end the movie and then we'll go home, you know, and that's really what people want. So they don't want these kind of movies made. So I give it a 10 because Paul Schrader thought of it, wrote it brilliantly, constructed it. It gets the point across. It's very smart and he got it made. And the other reason I give it a 10 is Ethan Hawke. And I can't end this podcast without a few words about Ethan Hawke in this movie. Ethan Hawke, I really loved him in Dead Poets Society, his first film, really. And you kind of blurred him with Chris O'Donnell, because Chris O'Donnell did Scent of a Woman, you know, where he was the young guy to Al Pacino's blind guy. And then right around the same time, you know, you had Ethan Hawke doing the young guy in Dead Poets Society to Robin Williams, you know, older guy poet. And it was kind of like the same sort of thing sort of going on there. But back in the day, I thought Ethan Hawke, I loved him in that movie, and I hated Chris O'Donnell. And it's funny is as they've gone on, Chris O'Donnell's a schmuck. He became a nobody. And Ethan Hawke's gone on to be an accomplished actor who's made a lot of good films over the years and really an artist. So I was right. So I'm just saying, that's all. I'll just end it here. I'm right. Okay, have a good day. No, but I was right about Ethan Hawke. He was better than Chris O'Donnell. Now the question is, what about the rest of Ethan Hawke's work? I didn't really like it. You know, where he went, like I said, he's made some great films and all that, but he lost me in the 90s and stuff and the movies he was making. And I always thought he was kind of like, the more I got to see him acting, I thought he was kind of aloof and arrogant and real breathy. And, you know, and he really took it up with, Richard Linklater, or later, or however you pronounce his last name. And I don't really like his movies that much. I think they tend to be overrated, including Boyhood, which really got raves and did get Ethan Hawke an Oscar nomination. But yeah, Boyhood was good, but I just thought it was overrated. I just think Richard Linklater is a naturalistic, kind of realistic filmmaker, but I don't know. To me, he hasn't made a great movie yet. All those Before Sunrise, After Sunrise, During Sunrise, Midnight Sunrise that Ethan Hawke made with him too, they were always, critics loved them because they were ideas and thoughts. But I don't know. To me, they were okay. They were good. They were okay. So I haven't loved a lot of Ethan Hawke's movies. I thought Training Day was really good, and he did a great job opposite Denzel Washington's Oscar-winning performance. But I really have always liked Ethan Hawke. I like him. And I love his viewpoints on movies. He grew up like me, right? He's around my same age. And he grew up loving the same sort of movies I did. He loves Michael Keaton. He loves him in, you know, Clean and Sober and Night Shift like I do. And I just connect with Ethan Hawke. So it's wonderful for me personally to see him finally get into a movie I love and get the lead role and do such a great job in that role in a movie I love. I'm really glad to see that because I like the guy. And I've always known he's a deep actor and a good actor. It's just been hard for me to embrace a lot of his movies over the years. But also, boy, he uses the lighting. Paul Schrader, the lighting accentuates the creases and aging that has happened in Ethan Hawke's face over the years. But also, of course, the blueness of his eyes and the color of his eyes. And he just uses so many shots that show a beauty and intensity and a pain in Ethan Hawke's face that makes his words and his character that much more sympathetic and empathetic. We empathize with him. And there are scenes of rage, scenes of sadness, scenes of debate, intellectual debate that come from him that are just so natural and real feeling, and you know, you're there with him. And I absolutely believe Ethan Hawke should get an Oscar nomination for this film. And personally, I think it needs a screenplay nomination too. It's well directed, but I don't think it stands a chance of getting that because it's not going to get a Best Picture nomination, no way in hell. But it definitely deserves a screenplay nomination and an actor one for Ethan Hawke, and I think he's really good in it. And if nothing else, you should see the movie just to see him, you know, one of our better actors and a really good person, hit his highest notes, hit all the right chords, give it his best go, I think, of his career. So if you like Ethan Hawke at all, or you just like seeing good actors do a great job in a movie, you should watch it for that. Okay, that's all. That's my first Reformed review / podcast. And I love you all. Bye. Yabba da boopa.